Blog Talk Radio.
Night podcast. I'm your host, Sean Aquino. Welcome as always. We try to do this every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific time. You can follow me at SAQUINO34 at SAQUINO34 on Twitter. And you can check us out on iTunes. Just search Knicks at Night and you'll find all of the past episodes. This is the third year we've been doing the broadcast. On Tuesday night, my good buddy Gregory Armstrong joins us. Frank Nutt typically joins us. Frank and Tom host the Monday night edition of the Knicks Night podcast. And tonight we have a special guest. Ned's going to be joining us. I met him. He's a good friend of Greg's, and I met him this past summer in Las Vegas Summer League. So we're going to get his insight. And we haven't had the opportunity yet to quite talk about the Knicks' start to the season, a 2-2 season. And I don't want to waste much time. We're going to have a one-hour show tonight. I want to get right to it, and I want to bring on the one and only, the incomparable, Greg Armstrong. How you doing, Greg?
Doing good, man. You know, trying to get some rest today after last night. I was in the Garden last night for the Spurs game. And, so far so good. We're up to a 2-2 start. So, could be worse, could be better. But overall, things are good.
Very good. Yeah, man, I'm sure it was exciting. Let's dive right into it. What was the vibe at the Garden last night? What were your takeaways from the game watching it live?
Well, the vibe's been pretty good at the Garden, especially since each of the home games have followed a great road win. So, you know, once they come back home after that road win, the vibe is really good in the Garden, you know, sellout crowd. I don't know if you know, like, from watching it on TV, I don't know if they showed it, but they put in this new lighting system where they're able to put graphics right on the court, and the graphics that they're able to show are just tremendous. And just one of the things that, you know, one of the bells and whistles that James Dolan add to the scene of the world's most famous arena that, you know, really makes it nice. But it's been good, you know. Would be nice if the Knicks would give them a little bit more to cheer about since we've lost both of our two home games. But it'll come. Hopefully Friday night against the Milwaukee Bucks. Hopefully we can get that first win. But San Antonio was, they're the Spurs. You know, they know how to play. That was a good lesson for the Knicks, you know, playing a team like that, they've been together for the most part for so many years. I mean, their offense is a clinic, and they really ran circles around us, especially from the second quarter on. The Knicks were not able to get over the hump, but we'll see what happens tomorrow night in Cleveland.
Yeah, it's going to be a good test. I think that what we really saw was a team that was kind of pacing itself in San Antonio. They played tremendous defense. I was looking at the stats; they're actually the third best defensive team in the NBA. And it showed against the Knicks last night. But, you know, the Knicks have been scoring at a great pace. Third best offense going into the game, actually. But the Knicks were held to 84 points. So, that's a key takeaway. But you could really talk about the Hawks being a 60-win team. We lost at the Garden to them. And the Spurs are, you know, adding David West and LaMarcus Aldridge. Definitely a title contender. So I love the effort that a lot of Knicks showed. I think that, you know, for a lot of these guys, they haven't seen an offense or a defense like the San Antonio Spurs before. And I'd like that, to me, Greg, maybe you agree that we seem like to have smart young players like Grant and Galloway, Porzingis, Derek Williams, still a young player. These guys are going to be able to, you know, kind of like learn from these experiences and hopefully down the line as the season progresses, when they play these championship-level contenders, they'll be better off, and hopefully they learn from their mistakes and it helps them be more competitive in those games. Do you get a sense with the youth that the Knicks have that they're going to be able to learn from this and be better later on?
I agree. I mean, these guys, they haven't seemed to be overwhelmed by playing in these games. They've given, you know, for the most part, they've given a really hard effort. And, you know, there's a learning curve. I mean, you know, especially for the rookies like Porzingis and Grant, you expect that, you know, certain things they're just going to have to, you know, they're going to have to, you know, it's baptism by fire. They're going to have to learn by going through the experience. But overall,
right.
I mean, they've been great. And Porzingis last night was amazing. I mean, before he got injured, you know, before, you know, Melo sat on his head and his neck.
Right.
He was able to pretty much hold his own against all-time great in Tim Duncan and LaMarcus Aldridge, who were a perennial all-star. I mean, you know,
right.
He grabbed 14 rebounds, 13 points, 14 rebounds. He had two block shots, three steals. He was just, you know, I mean, he was just great, you know.
He looked unbelievable.
He was.
Yeah.
He was. And, you know, and Grant last night, he was also really good. He's able to get in the paint with his penetration, driving toward the rim. That's one of his one of the things that he adds to the team that they don't get with the first unit. You know, those guys are going to just get better and better as time goes along. So it's good to see that we have these young players in the mix now, that we have a future, and we just need to, you know, just keep building with it. And speaking of Derek Williams, let me not forget him. He's been up and down a little bit. He's had, you know, the spectacular game in game one against Milwaukee, which he's not going to do every game. He's not going to score 24 points off the bench. But his energy and the way he gets up and down the court and his athleticism, you know, if he could just find that consistency within his game, he's going to be tremendous for us. So I'm very excited, really, about, you know, the young guys we have.
There's actually a future that, you know, makes some sense, which is something that we've been, you know, really worried about. I mean, I want to get a little bit about the emergence of two other young players. I mean, Langston Galloway, obviously an undrafted player, what a find he's been, and Kyle Quinn. I mean, we're going to have Kyle Quinn for the next 2 years. The guy's averaging 8 rebounds a game. I think he's actually the leading rebounder on our team in limited minutes, in about 20, 25 minutes a game. He's our leading rebounder. And then we have the guy for the next 4 years at $4 million a year. I mean, that is a great player for the young nucleus. What have been your impressions of Langston Galloway and Kyle Quinn?
Well, Langston Galloway, I mean, he's really been great. I mean, you know, being in our system last year and learning, you know, being an NBA player, you're coming out of the D League, you know, he's pretty much just fighting for his job last year.
Mm-hmm.
This year he's come back. He's worked on his body. He's worked on his game. He's just been tremendous. I mean, his pressure defense out on the perimeter is something that he adds that we kind of, you know, not really had with the first unit. But when he and Grant come in, they're able to do a nice job at that. His three-point-making shot ability has been tremendous. I don't know the exact number, but I believe he's shooting somewhere up like in the 60 percentile from three-point range. So he's been a godsend. I have nothing but nice things to say about, you know, about Gallo. And he's just a great guy. It couldn't happen to a greater guy. He's a humble kid. I had an opportunity to speak with him maybe a month or so before the season at Anthony Donahue's fundraiser, which was a good event. And he's just, you know, he's going to be a good, solid player coming off our bench or starting, whatever they want to do with him.
Right. Well, at this juncture, let's go ahead. Greg, you introduced me to your buddy from New York this past summer in Vegas when we watched the Summer League. And the three of us sat there and we watched Gary and Grant and Kristaps Porzingis for the very first time. So I want to bring in our good friend, Ned. How you doing, Ned? You're on the show.
Hey, how you doing, fellas? Sean, Greg, what's up?
Nothing much,
awesome,
man. Hanging in.
Excellent. Glad to hear from you guys.
Yeah, it's good to hear your voice. It's been a couple months, man. It's been really cool.
Yeah, sorry for the technical difficulties. I'm a rookie like Porzingis, but I'll get the hang of it.
Yeah. No worries, man. No, we were just discussing, you know, the impact of Jerry and Grant, Kristaps Porzingis. We got a little bit into Banks and Galloway, what a godsend he's turned out to be. And also, I think the fourth guy, to me, of the youth movement, a guy that we're going to have for the next 4 years at only $60 million, and Kyle O'Quinn. So let's get your thoughts. I mean, after the first 4 games of the season, let's talk about Porzingis, Grant, Galloway, and O'Quinn. What are your thoughts?
Sure. Well, overall, I'm a big fan of these young players. This is what the Knicks have desperately needed for some years now. Something mm-hmm. for the fans, stay excited for now and the future. First of all, with Porzingis, that's, you know, we went through a lot last year to get this number four pick. And it's going to take time, but to be honest, he's looked better than I thought he would. You know, when we all saw him over the summer, we all saw the talent, we all saw the potential, the athletic ability, but I was more worried about his strength or lack of it. But so far, like Greg was saying, he's been able to hang with the big boys, legends like Duncan, and he's going to have his ups and downs, but I like what I've seen from him so far. He's the type of guy who's tough. He might not be strong, but he's tough. He's mentally tough.
Yep.
In regards to Jerry and Grant, you guys saw, I liked him from day one. Very cerebral. He might not be the quickest guy or the best jump shooter, but he has his presence, he has his poise on the floor. He's a general, General Grant. So I like what I see from him. And going into Mr. Galloway there, I love his shooting. Okay. I love his shooting. I mean, he was a bit streaky last year, but so far, that stroke looks very, very nice.
Right. Yeah.
So far, so good. I'm excited.
Definitely. What about O'Quinn, our one of our younger free agent pickups?
I'm a big fan. First of all, he's from New York. He's from Queens. So he brings that pride to the game. You know, he's not going to let guys have layups over and over again. At the very least, he'll give you a hard, strong foul. You know, I'm not going to say he's the next Charles Oakley, but he kind of reminded me of those days, you know. He's not going to tolerate a lot of nonsense.
I'll say that. I'll say he might be.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm ready to go there.
You know what, though? I like him. He's versatile. Not only is he tough, strong, but he can shoot it. He could pass it, you know, and he brings intangibles like leadership, like toughness. That's what I like about him. He's a big fan of the signing.
Definitely.
And so far, so good.
Yeah, I mean, actually, O'Quinn is, you know, leading the team. I mentioned that big right earlier at 7 rebounds a game. Carmelo's right underneath at 6. Actually, Porzingis now is the leading rebounder. He's got over 8 rebounds a game. He's at 8.3, Kyle O'Quinn at 7, and Carmelo at 6.8. And so that tells you right there, O'Quinn, he's shooting 50% from the field, 80% from the line, you know. He's also he's giving you 2 assists, 1 steal, and, yeah, about 9 points a game. So off the bench at 20, 22 minutes, I mean, that's just – and, again, we have him for the next 4 years at $60 million. I mean, what a bargain that was. You know what? We also have a, you know, long-time – you know, host of the Monday Night edition of the Knicks Net podcast. I'm going to bring him on. We can all have a group discussion here. Frank Nutt is on the line. Frank, you're on the air with Ned and Greg. How you doing, Frank?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How are we doing?
Hey, how you doing? I read a lot of your articles. I like them.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
What's up, Frankie? How you doing tonight?
Hey, good, Greg. How's everything going down in Middletown?
Yeah, it's good, man. You know how it is up here. Nice and
quiet. That's for sure.
Well, let's continue to go around the horn here. I know, Frank, we talked about our previous shows, your thoughts on the rookies, the youngsters. But let's shift a little bit to, I know a big debate amongst Knicks fans here is the play of Jose Calderon. The good news is that he's starting, but he's not playing really any more than 20 to 22 minutes a game, which seems to me, it's a good thing. But him starting is the major, you know, debate. Now, Frank, where do you stand on that debate? Do you feel like it's okay if he starts as long as his minutes are limited, or do you feel like either Grant or Galloway should start over him? And do you think that the impending, you know, return of Aaron Aufalo has any bearing on Fisher's decision to keep Calderon in that starting spot? I'll start with you, Frank.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think there's a couple different things at play right here. I think the whole Calderon thing, obviously, you look at his total minutes per game, it's right around 20. Now, you question that, and you say, you know, is that because he's not completely healthy and Fisher's trying to work him back in the mix, trying to let him get his legs a little bit, trying to get a feel? Or do you say he's in that starting spot kind of like Vujicic is right now because he loves the way Galloway and Grant play together? Now, we saw last night in crunch time, you know, who was in the game, and it wasn't Calderon. It was Grant. It was Galloway. Even Vujicic got some burn that I was just kind of puzzled a little bit by, because it was at times where I thought, okay, you know, this is a good time to go on a run, and you have Vujicic in there. I don't know if – I guess my problem is with the Vujicic with the Vujicic-Calderon pairing more than just the Calderon. Because I think Calderon, at about 20 minutes a game, I think that's okay, especially without Bargnani 2.0 in. You know, I think until Aufalo, you know, until we see him on the floor, apparently, you know, possibly Sunday maybe against the Lakers – I think until we see him on the floor, you're not going to really know what Fisher's rotation is. You know, I think just like Jason Kidd a couple years ago, just like Pablo Prigioni's used, there's a spot for that crafty veteran, a guy that's going to shoot 40%+ from three, he's going to hit 85% of his free throws, who's not going to turn the ball over a ton. Like, yes, he's a sieve defensively, and we saw that last night. Tony Parker, who looks old in himself, was going by Calderon, you know, so that's a little bit concerning. We saw what Jeff Teague did to him the other night, which Atlanta right now is up by 15 against Miami, who I thought Miami's going to be a decent team. Not great, but a decent team, and they're up by 15 right now, just throwing that in there.
Right.
I stand on the Calderon front is that until Aufalo gets back, it's going to be tough to say what his usage is really going to be. Do I mind that he starts? I don't love it, but I understand why if you want to keep Gallo and Grant together. I understand it.
And Greg, your thoughts? Go back to you, Greg.
I pretty much agree with that. But Grant, he's the future. I mean, he's looked great when he's in there. And a couple of these games we've gotten off to slow starts. We seem to do better when we're pushing the ball and getting early offense. And Calderon, he just doesn't do it. He just, you know, I would prefer
he's
him
slow.
Coming off the bench. Yeah, he's slow. He's just too slow.
Yeah.
I watched him in preseason. He can't, I mean, he goes under the screen every time, which is a philosophy, but also he just can't keep anybody in front of him on offense.
Mm-hmm.
He just can't. I mean, the quality of today's NBA point guard, he's just substandard with his defense. And that puts us in a hole right from the beginning. So I would start Grant.
Yeah, well, you would start Grant. And, Frank, did you say who you would start? I think I may have missed that. You would start Grant or Galloway? Or?
Well, I think a lot depends on what you're going to do with Aufalo. I like Grant and Gallo playing together. You know, so if... So right now, like, if you want to start Grant and Galloway, I'm perfectly okay with that. I have Calderon and Vujicic come off the bench. If you're going to start Aufalo, I mean, I don't know. That's why I've been saying since, you know, the first week of July, we need another guard. Because, if you have another point guard in there, then you don't have to worry about Calderon. I think Grant's shown – when he plays with that, what I'm going to call their NASCAR package, you know, stealing from the 07 Giants. I love that Grant Galloway and Derek Williams combination, even throw Klee Anthony early in there, get up and down the floor. I mean, it's just so much fun to watch. And I think last night you're playing against the Spurs, who their biggest weakness is getting up and down the floor, and you have 0 points in transition. I mean, you have zero baskets in transition, and that's the one thing the Spurs can't defend. They can defend Melo driving down the lane, funneled to two big guys. I mean, they can defend that, and they did a great job of that. But, you know, to me, you got to play more up and down. And if you're going to do that, you might as well put Grant and Gallo in there and let them run. You know, let them learn.
Yeah, interject. I agree with that, especially in today's NBA where it's point guard driven. Is the pace. I think we're setting an all-time record pace so far in the first couple of games. But I get it. I get what Fisher's doing. You don't want to put pressure on a rookie point guard to start him right away. And also, I could see the advantage of pairing Grant and Galloway together. But Jose, the whole atmosphere of the game changes because he puts them behind with his defense.
Yeah.
By the time Grant and Galloway do have to come in, they're playing catch-up.
Right.
Right.
No. I do think you made an excellent point about a lot depends on when a follow comes back because that changes the whole rotation. Sasha, he was a nice player for Phil years ago. I don't even think he'll survive on the team at the end of the regular season. I think he's just a placeholder until a follow comes back. I think, if anything, Galloway should be starting, and then you start Jose as well, just for a little bit, then you could bring in Grant. But you can't have the two of them. It's the two of them together that make an awful defense.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. You might as well bring up Jimmer. Like you might as well bring Jimmer up and then cut Vujicic. I mean, really.
I mean, it's not just Jose. It's Jose and Sasha.
Right.
That's just awful.
Right.
It just puts us in a hole that I don't agree with to start the game.
Yeah.
We're playing catch-up from the start.
Right.
Well, yeah. Thoughts are along that line where Isaac Galloway, to me, he's a very mini he's a Derek Fisher type player. I watch it, obviously, growing up in L.A., I've watched a lot of Laker games, you know, before Sunday Ticket existed and stuff. I watch a lot of the way Fisher plays. Like, this fearless mentality, an undersized guard who's just, you know, in your grill. He follows that. He's like almost to a T, I think he's a pretty good triangle point guard in that sense. And I think that just the simplicity of saying, okay, you put Galloway in that starting lineup, and then you put when a follow's ready, I mean, that backcourt can defend. And that's what needs to happen, as you said, Greg. In today's NBA, you're facing Russell Westbrook, John Wall. You know, you're facing the best of the best guards. And you need to have Isaac to defend so that you don't get into the hole. And then I think that with the second unit, I don't see Calderon. I think I kind of like an idea of Calderon and Grant playing together on the second unit because Calderon can stretch the floor when Grant is penetrating into the basket, and he can find that. And then maybe at the three you play, you know, you can play Derek Williams with O'Quinn or Seraphine. I mean, there's a lot of things that you could do. I like the Knicks' versatility, but I think everyone makes good points about the Knicks' ability to push the pace, you know, and the Knicks are already way ahead of that, which has been very, very impressive to see. I mean, I looked at the stats. The Knicks entering the San Antonio game had the third best offense in terms of offensive efficiency. They fell to eighth, but they fell to eighth because they played San Antonio, who has the third best defensive efficiency in the NBA. But they're still in the top 10. So, I mean, that's huge. And I think here's the stat here. There's an article that was on Posting and Toasting where it said that the Knicks are third in offensive efficiency entering the game. And then when it came to pace, the Knicks were like seventh or eighth in the NBA in pace. So that is a complete change to, you know, whatever happened last year. So you put Galloway there, I think he could change the pace as well.
And if you remember from the summer when we were watching the games, I got into the X's and O's. And I noticed how they weren't running the triangle originally to start plays. They were running like a pick-and-roll crossover.
Right, high screen and roll.
Initiate the pick-and-roll. And what they're doing now, at least what I saw yesterday, they were mimicking a lot of the Spurs offense. They were swinging the ball from side to side, then they would start the triangle. It's just, it's just something to change it up so it's not so predictable.
Well, I think that's what killed them last year. I mean, they were so predictable because, I coach college and high school basketball, and you know that when you're teaching an offense to guys and they don't know it as well as maybe they could, and then you have teams that see you over and over again and they start to know it, you don't have a distinct advantage, because basically what they're going to try and do, they're going to try and take away your first two options, and they're going to make you beat them with option 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
And what happens is, if you're running the triangle every single possession down the floor and you don't know it as well as maybe a Vujicic does, or you know, Derek Fisher did when he was playing, or the Laker teams or the Bulls teams in the 90s, like, it's tough for you to capitalize on option 4, 5, and 6 when you're really only comfortable with 1, 2, and 3, and teams are now taking those three away. And yeah, that's the part that needed to change. Yes, use the triangle, use the spacing, get Melo in the pinch post, you know, get Porzingis on the post where he can, you know, go to work, or get Lopez on the post where he can pass out of a double, you know, get those things. Those are fine. But you have Porzingis now, who is just amazing on high ball screens at the top of the key. Get the ball in his hand there, you know, use those triangle things to get your spacing in that. But I mean, it's a pick and roll league, and you have a point guard in Grant who runs the pick and roll well. Put him in a position to succeed. Don't make him be that prototypical triangle point guard if he's not. If he's a pick-and-roll point guard, let him be a pick-and-roll guy.
Yeah.
Right.
Well said.
Yeah. And, Greg, I wanted to start with you on to the next point, and we're kind of alluding on it, but, you know, I think we're kind of seeing some maturation in terms of the job that Derek Fisher has done thus far. Carmelo's only playing 32 minutes a game. He last year played in some games 37, 38 minutes a game. The Knicks are actually doing a good job of like building Porzingis and Grant into the rotation, slowly but surely giving them both a little bit more minutes. Derek Williams and Calderon are on the bottom of the minutes list for rotation players, which shows that when Derek Williams has a defensive lapse or sometimes he has some careless turnovers, Fisher's settling him down. I think Fisher has shown, and especially on the offensive end, the ability to adapt. And, Greg, I want you to get your thoughts first before we have everyone else jump in. What about the job Fisher's done so far? Is it because the players are better, or because Fisher has just, I think, learned from his first year? What do you think?
I think it's a combination of both. Last year he was learning on the job, and the quality of the players, especially after the trades that happened mid-season, weren't as good as they are now. And, you know, he's really done a good job at mixing it up, you know, not overusing Melo, especially coming off the surgery where he can't play a lot of minutes. And the roster's just deeper. There's so many guys.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to, you know, really burn guys out. So, you know, he's pretty much had his set first unit and his second unit, and they seem to, you know, kind of complementing each other. Like we said, the second unit has been like the team that more up-tempo, that's doing a nice job of really getting the Knicks out and running. So I think so far I could see where he's learned. I mean, last year he was triangle or bust right from the beginning. Every time we came down court, it was just right into the triangle, you know. And it was like Frank said, you know, after a while, teams knew what we were doing. There was no deviation, and, you know, and we were just terrible. So, you know, he's definitely, the offense is more diversified, which is a plus, and he's using his bench. He's using a lot of guys. And so far, so good. So, you know, hopefully as the season continues, he can continue to learn and continue to grow. And when he gets another option in Aflalo joining the team shortly, hopefully that'll, you know, give him another piece that could really help us out. So far, I would give Fisher, if I was going to give him a grade, I would give him a B as far as with how he's done so far.
Okay.
Cool. Ned, what do you think?
Yeah, I pretty much agree with Greg. I mean, last year when a lot of my friends were bashing Coach Fisher, I always defended him. I mean, who did he have to play with? It kind of wasn't fair, and that was his first year. Now he has more pieces, he has more tools, he has the depth, like Greg said, and now we're seeing better decisions. I like the fact that, you know what, Derek Williams, great first game, but shaky defense the next couple of games. Okay, you're going to sit on the bench, bring in Lance Thomas. I like little things like that. Also what Frank mentioned with the variation in the triangle offense, mixing things up. So you can see, I mean, he's obviously a smart basketball mind. We knew that from all his years with the Lakers. It's just a matter of him getting the players, and now that he has them, we could finally see his coaching.
Cool. Frank?
Yeah, no, I think, I'm obviously, you know, we're four games into this. I mean,
right.
Some of the things that concerned me last year were just interesting roster moves, interesting lineup moves. Is it a bit concerning that he's wanted to start, you know, Sasha Vujicic straight off of the street from Russia? You know, a little bit, kind of. I mean, you know, do I think it has a lot to do with the fact that Porzingis had, you know, a great game last night, you know, that the Knicks were in the game more so than Fisher's coaching strategy? A little bit. Just knowing, like, from a coach myself, like, I will take a talented group of guys over a great coach any day. I mean, because there's only so much that you can do. And at some point, it's like, you know what? Like, I try and get these guys in a position to succeed, and then I just let them do what they do. I mean, that's the majority of what good coaches do. And,
yeah.
I mean, you've got, like, I don't necessarily know if Fisher's doing that right now by not having Grant and Galloway in there, you know, playing 27, 28 minutes a game. I mean, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think we'll
right.
find out a lot in the next 5 or 10 games. They have a tough stretch. I think we were talking about it today, guys. I mean, you know, they play the Cavs twice. You know, they just played the Spurs. I know they play a Lakers team that's, you know, not, you know, they're looking for a win. I mean, they're going to get desperate sooner or later. No one wants to lose their first 5 games as an NBA team. I mean, you know, they're going to be desperate. And, you know, you look at some of the other games they have coming up. They play the Bucks again, who are going to want revenge. I mean, and not for nothing, but, you know, what's up with Flalo? What's up with Porzingis? Like, is he going to miss a game? Like, you know, what's
yeah.
the deal? I mean, so I think we'll find out a lot in the next 2 weeks about what Fisher is planning on doing. Because, you know, does it concern anyone else that, you know, that Derek Williams played so well in the preseason and now can barely see the floor? I mean, it concerns me a little bit because I thought that he was going to be a big piece. And judging by the last 2 games, he really hasn't been that big of a piece.
Yeah, if I could reply
yeah.
to that, what I noticed about Derek Williams is, yes, on offense, he had a great game that first game. However, I noticed on defensive assignments, he falls asleep. He actually leaves his man sometimes to go cheat on the ball.
Right.
So maybe
mm-hmm.
Fisher is like, hey, I want somebody who's disciplined, follows the system, follows the rules, and that's what Lance Thomas gives me. Maybe. I'm not there.
I think you hit it on the head.
I think that's
absolutely right there.
Lance is great too.
And then also here's another thought. We were talking about Fisher and the coaching in regards to the rotation playing Sasha and Jose. What if this has nothing to do with Fisher and this has to do with Phil Jackson, the man on top? Okay, we heard in articles during the summer that he wants to be more involved with the coaching. What if he's like, hey, I know Sasha, I played with him for years. I know Jose. I traded Tyson Chandler for him. I want to make sure that these guys get the chance to prove me right.
Mm-hmm.
That is a theory. I'm not saying I agree with it,
sure.
but I've
right.
heard that theory.
Well, I hope that's not the case. I mean, I'm all for Phil Jackson giving his input, helping Fisher, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, there's a fine line. You know, Fisher's the coach.
Yeah.
The coach coaches. And the GM or the team president, you know, adds the players and that sort of thing. So I'm hoping that, you know, Phil Jackson is not dictating to Fisher who to play and who not to, which I really don't think that's the case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, I think so, too. You know, Sasha, I don't think he should be seeing the floor with Brent and Galloway and Afalo especially play. But I mean, there have been games where he's done other things. You know, like I think on the year he's averaging close to 5 rebounds, over 3 assists, a steal and a half. He's shooting. He is shooting well, and his shot selection is questionable for sure. But he definitely, when he moves off the ball, it's like he's a perfect representation of what the two guard in the triangle should be doing, minus the post up game. You know, because he's not a good post up player, but he is doing other things that I think kind of show you know, I think it's a good example for a follower to watch game film on and to say, okay, here is, you know, all of the other things you can do. Because a follower's always been a kind of an all-around player that can give you rebounds, assists, and do a lot of other things. So I think that, you know, I agree on a little bit in terms of, you know, I think his playing time is going to go down as we move on. And I think Phil is more concerned with I think that theory is just, I don't know. I wouldn't really go for it. I think that, if anything, he's letting him know these are guys that can shoot well in the triangle, and and Sasha knows it. But, you know, all good points, all great discussion. But, Frank, I know you got to head out, so I really, you know, appreciate you giving us a call and jumping in for a couple minutes. Frank, when are you guys going to do the next show?
We will be on Monday. I believe the Knicks don't play Monday, so Tom and I will be back on Monday. We probably will have either a combination of guys. I know Chris Herring is going to come on with us.
Oh, wow.
He was busy. He was busy a couple weeks ago when I asked him.
Cool.
And then we will also have it's actually kind of cool. So I've met Jared Zwirling a few times, and he is now the player correspondent for the Players Association.
Yeah,
and he's not
cool.
He's not working for he worked for ESPN, then he worked for
Bleacher Report
and Turner. And now he's with the Players Association. And I talked to him the other day, and he's still able to come on and do all that kind of stuff. So
okay.
We're hoping to have a combination of Jared and obviously Chris Herring and a couple other people. So we'll definitely
Beautiful.
Let you guys know. And, you know, everyone's always welcome to call the show and talk to us. Tom and I like to have a good time. So, you know, it's always cool talking Knicks. And Tom's excited, which always makes the show better, because when he's not engaged, it's like pulling teeth.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So you guys keep doing your thing, though. I love listening to you guys, and I can't wait to listen to the rest of the podcast tomorrow while I'm driving around.
Very
okay.
good, Frank. Everyone follow Frank Nutt at Frank Nutt on Twitter.
That's right,
thanks,
two T's. All right, guys, take it easy.
Okay, take care, Frank.
Bye, take care, Frank.
Peace.
All right, guys. Okay, so cool. By the way, everyone, you're listening to the Knicks and I podcast with Sean, Greg, and Ned. We're just talking about the Knicks. We just got talking about Derek Fisher, and kind of grading him on that end. Let's talk a little bit about Carmelo Anthony's performance a little bit. Obviously, he's not shooting well, 30% from downtown, 37% from the field. He had that great game on Halloween night at Washington. Whoever wants to go first, feel free. What are your thoughts on Carmelo Anthony's performance? Are you guys concerned about this long term?
I'm not concerned about it long term. You know, in the preseason he came out, he was shooting the lights out, but you know, that was an aberration. It's preseason. You don't want to get too crazy about it. And you know, he's just still working his way back, you know, from surgery, you know, getting, you know, his legs where they need to be, you know, so he can get the lift on his shot. He spoke about it. You know, he's been streaky. I mean, the first two games he wasn't good. They were able to overcome it again in the Milwaukee game. He had 11 points in that game. I believe he was 4-17 shooting.
Mm-hmm.
you mentioned the Washington game, he was outstanding. In the Washington game, he was Vincent Melo. In that game, the one concern that I do have about Melo is that when he's not shooting well, I still think that sometimes the ball sticks too much, and that, you know, the ISOs is a little bit too much at times. Well, he just needs to just trust the offense, keep the ball moving. He's got help now. It shows, you know, the offense, you know, they're scoring 106 points a game. There are enough options that, you know, we can still score. And, you know, worst come to worst, if the clock is running down, he'll get the ball back at the end of the clock, you know. So that's something that I'm concerned about. I just want him to just let it come to him. Don't feel like if he's having
mm-hmm.
an off-shooting game that, oh, I got to get my points, so I got to, you know, jack up some shots, or I got to dominate the ball. That was something that I saw last night. It was a little
yeah.
bit annoying to me, you know.
Of course, mm-hmm. definitely.
Yeah. So
yeah.
Other than that, I think he'll be fine. You know, Melo, he seems like he's moving around pretty good. That was
yeah.
the main thing that I wanted to look for after the surgery, to see if, you know, if he was limping or, you know, there was a speed reduction, and I don't see any of that. So, you know, I think that, you know, eventually he'll be back to being Melo.
Yeah.
How about you, Matt?
Carmelo. So, a couple of things. First of all, I'm not worried about the present. I think, like Greg said, he's looking great, especially on defense, actually. He's moving around. He's hustling, tapping on balls. I think it's just a timing thing. I mean, guys, he took off 9 months. He hasn't played in real basketball games for a long time. I think that he's not the only star. James Harden was struggling. I think now in the preseason, coaches are hesitant to play their stars many minutes. That's why, if you notice now in the league, the game's just starting, there's a lot of, like, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th bench players, like O'Brien on Milwaukee. They're just playing so that until the star players get their legs back. So I'm not worried about Melo. I agree with what Greg said in terms of him forcing shots, especially when it's not there. Let the offense work itself. I don't like the number of contested shots that he's taken, and it's hurting his shooting percentage. But I think he's a great player. He'll grow out of that. My main concern is when January, February comes, because being a physician, I know the background of these surgeries, and not every patient is the same, but eventually that will take its toll, running on the hardwood all those weeks and months. I did some research on the injury. So he had the patella tendon debridement procedure. Only two players have had that recently in the NBA. That's Dwayne Wade and Danny Granger. Remember him?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Yeah, remember how good he was, and then he fell off the map? Again,
yeah,
I'm not saying that Melo's going to be the same as those, but it's just something to worry about. And then also, 90% of patients who get this injury need a second surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I'm not saying that's going to happen during this season. Hopefully, it'll be in the off season. But my point is that knee won't be the same. And with age and with time, there will be decline. But until then, he's looking great. I hope for the best. But it's just something in the back of my head that I'll look out for, like January, February, around the All-Star break, that I hope the knee keeps up.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Well,
Yeah,
we have four more years on that contract. And, yeah, you're right. I mean, not to say that it's going to happen, but it is definitely concerning. And I think at least Carmelo's minutes are from 38 minutes or down to 32 minutes, but maybe Carmelo needs to take a couple of nights of back-to-backs off as, you know, early on in the season and see what happens. But, you know, that kind of makes me think about what do you think the Knicks' goals are for this season, considering they don't have a first-round pick. Greg and I spoke about it a couple of weeks ago. We disagreed. Greg thought the Knicks were going to be fighting for a playoff spot. Of course, I was overconfident. I'm not ever going to make it. But bottom line, we think the Knicks are going to be right around, you know, fighting for one of the last spots. Now that we've seen this team after four games, and let's say Carmelo stays healthy where he's able to be a part of a playoff push, what are your guys' thoughts on what this team can be now that we've seen a little bit of them?
Okay, do you mind if I go first? Only because I know you guys talked a couple weeks ago. I didn't get a chance to chime in. But overall, I love the team. I love the roster overhaul. These guys fight. They play hard. And they're talented. Last year we didn't have the talent. This year we do. But with that said, this team still revolves around Carmelo Anthony. And like I mentioned a couple minutes ago, I'm worried about his health. Right now, I think he's working his way back into shape. I'm worried more about January, February, okay? Also, I think the Knicks will be able to compete only because the East is so weak. I think they should be around 35, 40 wins, which is double their win total from last year. They'll play hard. But they'll make some mistakes, a lot because, you know, they're playing two rookies, playing major minutes, and they'll have some learning mistakes. I think overall this is a good stepping stone for the team. And if you remember, I was questioning the draft pick only because I like KP, Porzingis, but he wasn't going to be great like, for another 2 years. At least that was my opinion. He's still kind of raw. So we have a star who's a win-now star, and then we have a rookie, two rookies that we drafted that won't be in elite status until at least another couple of years. So, like, where's the direction? Are we trying to win now or win later? Regardless, I think they'll be competitive. The rookies will gain a lot of experience. And Melo, we hope for the best. We hope he holds up, scores his points. Should be about 20, 23 points a game. Make an all-star appearance. And I think we do have enough talent to compete for that eighth spot. I do think that. The week is the East is very, very weak. I'm not impressed with Indiana, Boston. I think we can compete with them. I mean, we beat Washington. So, yeah, those are my overall thoughts.
Interesting.
Yeah,
good stuff. Greg?
Yeah, well, last year, I believe the eighth seed was 40. What was the Celtics? 40 wins? 41? Right around there?
No, it was actually the Nets. They were 37 and 40 whatever, which makes
82. 37-43 or 42.
All right,
yeah.
45.
Yeah.
So 45. I think we're all in agreement that 35 to 41 win window, 40-41 is where we're talking.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to be a 50-win team. We're not going to – let's not be delusional or anything like that. You know, so if we continue, if that's where we're going to be, we should be in that place. We should be in the hunt in the East. You know, I mean, you know, like you said, the Bostons of the world, Milwaukee looks like they're a little, you know, shaky right now. But even though I expect them to do much better, their defense has been shaky to start out with. Detroit has been surprising. This is a team that is pushed up into the, you know, into the playoff picture. They look like a team that might be around. So that could be a spot that wasn't there last year that will be this year, even though the Celtics, they're not looking too great. You know, it's too early. But, I think that we have a shot for the playoffs. And, you know, being that we don't have a draft pick next year, we're just going to have to, you know, hope that in free agency, the fact that we've been improving will entice a big free agent to come.
Exactly.
You know,
right.
You know, that's where the improvement is going to come to take us to that next level next year.
Right.
So as long as we stay competitive and as long as the guys, you know, show a lot of promise. And Tim Duncan last night, he spoke glowingly of Porzingis. You know, so if this trend continues around the league and other star players see the potential in this young kid, somebody's going to want to come. Somebody's going to want to come play with us.
Yeah.
So I think that we're on track. I think we're going in the right direction now.
Exactly.
Still didn't load up with a lot of bad contracts, so we're in good shape financially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know with the cap going up, everything hinges on Melo, like you said, Ned. We need Melo to stay healthy and, you know, continue to, you know, gain as a leader and lead this young bunch. So I like the way we're going right now. So I'm happy with it. You know, we're 2-2. Then to me, they won a couple of games I didn't expect them to win.
Yeah.
So that showed me something right there. We're going on the road.
Right.
We're winning games. That's showing some toughness. We beat Washington, who was a top 4 team last year.
Exactly.
We went into their house and came out with a win, and we could have easily folded in that game, and we came out with the win. And we don't even have a Flavo yet. A Flavo is supposed to be a big piece of this team.
Big piece.
Right.
You know, so if he comes in and he's able to do what he does, and hopefully he doesn't disrupt the flow, which, you know, we have right now, because it's always a little bit difficult when a guy's not in there. Now you have to incorporate him into your group. So that's going to be the next challenge for Fisher. Once a Flower gets back, we got to fit him in, make him comfortable, make him a piece of the offense and defensive schemes, and, you know, go from there. So we'll see.
Right.
So far, so good.
Yeah. Excellent point. And that's one way we'll get to evaluate Fisher. How do you incorporate a 15-point scorer back into a triangle offense that seems to be clicking, you know? He doesn't strike me, Afala doesn't strike me as someone who's a ball hog and will complain if he doesn't get the ball, but he is a scorer. So how does he fit in? But I think he will. He seems like he likes New York. He likes Melo. He's excited about this, and he's a team player. So I'm optimistic about that.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think he's another great value deal. I'm looking forward to watching him play. I mean, that first game as a guard, he looked tremendous. He looked like a perfect fit. So it's going to be great to see him. One thing I wanted to mention is that I have a game on, the Miami-Atlanta game in the background, and I noticed that Charlotte beat Chicago 130-105 today. 130.
Wow.
Yeah, the Bulls gave up 100. This is not the same Tom Thibodeau team. Giving up 130 points to the Hornets. And then the second thing that stood out to me was Detroit. I think they were 3-0. They lost by 13 to the Pacers at home.
Really?
Whatever, it's the East. You know, yeah, the teams go back and forth. I mean, you know, interesting game in the East. Anybody can beat anybody else any given night. But the stat that stood out to me is Andre Drummond, 25 points, 28 rebounds.
My goodness.
What? Wow. Yeah.
He's a monster.
Wow. Yeah. So
yeah, if you notice about Detroit, Van Gundy has exactly the roster he wanted. Shooters surrounded by, Drummond surrounded by a whole bunch of shooters. He can get any rebound he wants.
And a penetrating point guard, Reggie Jackson, Reggie Jackson, who gets twice like Nelson. Yeah. Go ahead, Greg. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, me and you, we had a big fight about that the other day. The fact that I was saying that Greg Monroe, that Van Gundy, he really wanted to keep him, and they made a competitive offer to keep him. And your contention was, no, he never really wanted him. He just lowballed him because he really wanted to decide between the two guys and keep Drummond and surround him with the shooters. And so far, whatever it was, we'll never know. But it seems to be working out pretty good right now. With
so far, so good.
You know,
hey, guys, I have one question for you. Two players who had a lot of high expectations for it, but I can't seem to find them. Where is Tim Hardaway and Cle'Anthony Early? What's going on with them?
I don't know what's going on with Tim down in Atlanta. I haven't really paid much attention to his situation, but the one thing that struck me as odd, I've seen he's been inactive in a lot of their games.
I mean, they traded a high draft pick for him, and he's not playing.
Yeah, and then when they came to New York, I would expect that he was going to, you know, get in the game out of respect. This is normally, you know, you play against your old team, they throw you in there, you know, even to give you the crowd response, anything to give, you know, throw you a bone. He didn't even get in the game against the Knicks.
Right.
So I was like, wow. So evidently, Budenholzer is not really feeling him.
Really?
Right now, you know. So and as far as Cle'Anthony, I don't know. I think, you know, the rotation, I mean, we're already playing 10 guys. How many guys can you play? You know, I mean, I think Derek Williams is behind Carmelo Anthony at the 3 spot. And essentially, he would be like the third string small forward. I don't know if there's a need for him.
And you have Lance Thomas there, too.
I mean,
we saw him during the summer. He looked amazing.
He did.
And they drafted him. I had big expectations for him.
He'll get his time.
Yeah,
it's a long season.
I agree. I think he will get his time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, guys get nicked up. You know, it's a long season. He's looked great. He worked on his body. I understand he was doing yoga during the off-season. He looks great. He's able to run the floor, you know, the way he can get out and run
is
a plus, so he could definitely be an asset in that regard. I just think that right now he's just the odd man out in the rotation, and the fact that Thomas was able to step up and provide some great defense along with him knocking down his shot. That's been the key, too, with Thomas on offense. He's been able to hit that mid-range jumper, which he wasn't doing in the preseason.
Yeah.
So that was something that I was kind of worried about him, but he's been really good knocking down that shot. And I think Fisher trusts him.
60%. Yeah,
right.
He does.
Yeah, Fisher really
trusts him. You could tell it's kind of that, hey, Lance learned the system well, and he's a terrific example for the rest of the guys. You don't need to be, you know, scoring 15 a game. Play solid defense and knock down your open Jays. He's shooting over 60% from the field and you're going to see the floor. And that's a great example for Cle'Anthony Early, and especially a terrific example for Derek Williams, you know, a guy who could play the 3-4. And Derek Williams has all the physical tools to be able to play defensively how he would need to in this system. So I think that Fisher's playing the right way. And eventually, Lance Thomas, if, you know, the other guys step up, Thomas won't play. He's a team player. He'll understand it. And it fits for what the Knicks want to do in the future, which is build that, you know, that winning, non-selfish type, you know, environment. Mm-hmm. So I think it's great.
Yeah, definitely.
So what do you guys think, Ned, we didn't get your thoughts about the East overall. You don't have to go by, you know, give us your top eight in order, but which teams are do you think are going to surprise? Which teams do you think are going to make the playoffs? Is there any team that's not going to make the playoffs that made it last year? What are your thoughts on the East?
Well, I think there's different tiers. The top tier, which only belongs to Cleveland. I think Cleveland, they might not take the regular season seriously, but once they get Kyrie, you know, LeBron, Love, clicking on all cylinders, I think they're the cream of the crop.
Right.
Below that tier, that's when you have the Washingtons, Atlanta, Chicago. I like their systems. I like the fact that they're pushing the ball now. These guys have great point guards, and they're finally using a fast pace to get easy points, quick transition. I think that'll help them, especially John Wall. They're playing Dudley, Chris Humphries at the four position to open up space so that John Wall can just create havoc. Now, after those two tiers, then it's a mystery game. You have Milwaukee. I'm still high on them. I like their youth. I like their length, their defense. But so far, I mean, they've had injuries with Jabari. Has anybody noticed that OJ Mayo hasn't played yet? So they have a lot of injuries that they have to deal with. I do like Detroit in the middle. Toronto, even though they're not as strong as they were last year, I do like that Carroll brings toughness and depth to the team. Again, if he plays the four instead of the three, it opens things up for Lowry. This is a point guard game now. And then, like I said earlier, I think the Knicks will be fighting for, you know, that eighth seed, whether it's versus Boston, Indiana. Don't sleep on Orlando. Scott Skiles is a mediocre coach who runs out his welcome, but he gets his boys to play defense.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they'll be improved as well.
Yeah. Well, like we've been talking about, man, it's pretty evenly matched all around. It's going to be a terrific season.
Yeah.
We can already see teams are playing each other. Games are very competitive. And for us, we get to sit back and watch Grant, Galloway, and Porzingis continue to grow. And I like that the Knicks have a lot of tough games to start, but the schedule, especially in December, gets easier. And hopefully at that point, the Knicks are able to incorporate a follow and get flowing and build up a winning record before the season starts to get difficult, before the West Coast trip and so on and so on. But it's going to be fun, Ned. And what a pleasure. We'd love to have you on again. We're pretty much wrapping it up here. So if anybody has any closing thoughts, feel free before we end the program.
Okay, guys, thanks for having me on. This was a lot of fun. Go Knicks.
All right.
Yes, sir.
All right, Ned. Where are you on Twitter, by the way, so everybody can follow you?
I am at NOKARTER. It's my first initial last name.
N-O-K-A-R-T-E-R. There you go. Oh, perfect. Okay, beautiful. All right,
yeah.
Greg at GStrong011. So you start following us. Like I said, you can listen to the podcast. They're all archived on iTunes. Just search for Knicks at Night, and you'll be able to hear all the previous podcasts. And until next time, everybody, we're going to go ahead and sign off and say good night. Let's go Knicks.
Peace. Okay, fellas. Take care.